me that don't believe in science. Written on your forehead, always be denying. You're the dummy that don't believe in science. Written on your forehead, always be denying. Hey, hey.
All right. Welcome.
Welcome to our episode.
They had turned down the volume a little bit on my on my headphones. I think I'm getting blasted right now.
Uh-oh. I have given up on trying to come up with the number because I couldn't tell you what number we are.
Yeah.
But welcome to the episode.
Here we are.
Here we are.
We are here. This is now. The time
is now is here. time is irrelevant, but also relevant.
Wow, so deep.
Existential.
This is our not our first recording distance. Wow, that English.
Now distance recording. Yes, we are not- here. Here we are.
This is not our first distance recording, but it is our. The beginning of
the end.
The beginning of our distance recording future.
Because indefinitely.
I have moved back to Washington.
Yep.
And Celia has remained in Utah. So there are one state dividing us.
Is there? Wow. I guess.
That English man.
You're struggling.
Yeah. Wow. It's been a long day. Between us, there is Idaho and or Oregon, depending on where you're coming from. All depends.
I guess, but I don't think Utah touches Oregon.
Yeah, you're right. It touches Idaho. When I drive home from Utah to Washington, I'm sure our listeners really are interested.
I'm sure. They're probably like, guys, cut this out. This is irrelevant and a disaster.
Well, for those who are curious, I go from Utah up to Idaho, taking I-15. I cut over to I-84.
Yep. I'm glad we have the specifics.
Yeah. Just want to make sure everyone knows what's up. I cut over to I-84. I-84 takes me all the way through Idaho, and then it even cuts into Oregon a little bit, just eastern Oregon. And then at Oregon, I cut over the Columbia River, which maybe we'll talk about someday on this podcast.
One day.
And I'll cut up, the Columbia River separates Oregon and Washington. I cut up to Washington, and that's how I get home.
Do you want to give your home address, too, while you're at it?
Nope. Just a general idea of my... shenanigans,
beer locations. Dope.
Yes. So yeah, here we are. We are doing an actual legit recording because even though we are using Zoom still,
we're using our fake recordings. What does that even mean? We're doing everything else you've listened to up until this point has been fake. It has not been real at all.
No. I guess it's all legit. But this is
as opposed to unlegit. I'm still confused.
This is too legit because the other distance recordings that we have done, we have not had our podcasting microphones. We have been using our dreaded computer microphones.
Oh, yes.
Which has caused the quality to go down. And so here we are.
Hopefully the quality is going up.
Our listeners are like, it's not.
It's getting worse. In fact, you two are getting worse.
Yeah. Maybe even though the listener, what is it? The audio is better. The content is decreasing steadily.
Rapidly. Very rapidly.
We're on a downward spiral. Guys, we only promised 2 years. We're on the downhill of that. So
we're on the downhill. Awesome. Fabulous.
So anyways, as you can tell, me and Celia haven't talked since I moved out like a week ago, which for us is a very long time.
It is.
So we have a lot to say.
We do.
Lots of jokes that are that have pent up over the last like week and a half.
Stale jokes that have already died that I'm still trying to use because I haven't gotten to use them yet.
Yeah. Good so stuff. You guys get to hear all of the raw content right here on Good Girls Go Green.
Because Julia's not editing this week.
we've pushed off recording, so the amount of editing will be limited. So I apologize.
I see. Interesting. Well. I'm sure everyone at home is anxious to hear our topic.
Probably.
And it is Mount Everest.
Oh, I thought we were going to say it at the same time.
No.
We mess that up every week. Okay.
Next time. Didn't think we were trying for it every week, but okay.
Now you know. Next time we'll be trying for it.
Next time we'll. So we're doing Mount Everest. It's fabulous.
I have Part never been. Have you been?
Nope. I have not.
Cool. So but we're after... both inexperienced Mount Everesters, but after the internet, we are professionals.
Yes. After the research that we have, I haven't heard your research, but after my research, I have become motivated and also terrified of Mount Everest.
I am on the same page with you. Here's the thing. I was talking to one of our trusted advisors of the podcast. Mm-hmm. It's a very exclusive club that we have. Yes,
of which there are many.
and she, I was telling her what our topic would be this week. And she asked a very interesting question, which I would like to ask you, Celia.
Okay, ask.
I don't know why I'm trying to do this like broadcast style. I don't know
what
why
broadcast being... style.
I don't know. For some reason, I feel like my tone this week is kind of weird. I'm kind of thrown off by it. But
okay.
Anyways,
you keep being weird. I'm gonna do me.
So she asked me, which would you rather do? Would you rather go scuba diving, like? Into a deep, I don't know. She didn't give a
into the exact... Mariana Trench.
I don't know. No, not something super deep, but just like scuba diving, like down deep in the ocean. Or would you rather climb Mount Everest? Which would you rather do?
Are you asking me as like a which one am I more scared to do? Which one's more feasible to do?
Yeah, I guess which one would you be more scared of? That's the way that I took it, at least.
Mount Everest. Because, really? Yes, because I have conquered my deep water fear. I am scuba certified. I am motivated to do so. I might start scuba diving on the weekends. Who knows?
Wow.
Yep.
That's
but
crazy.
Everest takes a lot of time and preparation. And after some of the research, like, you could die. I mean, you could die scuba diving as well, but the amount of people who go scuba diving and the amount of people who die versus the amount of people who hike Mount Everest compared to the amount of people who die are very different numbers.
Yes. Agreed.
Obviously.
Yeah. Well, interesting. Interesting food for thought.
So, yes. Because I feel like, here's my thing. Here's my thought. You can die scuba diving by you doing something wrong. If you do something wrong and stupid, you could die.
Yeah.
Mount Everest, you could do everything correctly and you could still die.
That's a good point.
That's where I'm kind of like...
professionals die sometimes.
Yeah.
That's a great point. And we're clearly not professionals. So.
Nope. But I still... look at me still wanting to try Mount Everest.
I think we should do it. Let's take a live... podcast show up to Mount Everest.
Mount Everest. We're gonna record right on top. Coming to you live from the summit of Mount Everest.
Oh my gosh, that would be
you got
insane.
Us here, everybody. You got us here.
If anybody wants to start a GoFundMe for Good Girls Go Green,
you know what? If a GoFundMe started to get us on top of Mount Everest, I would do it. I would do it.
Yeah. Same. If I was paid a lot of money.
If the GoFundMe was exponential, then I would go and do it.
What's your price? Name a price, Celia. Don't undersell yourself.
$1 million.
Oh, that's a little overselling, I feel like. We're trying to be millionaires here on this podcast.
If anybody wants to put me on top of Everest, you know my price.
There we go.
You know where to find me.
You heard it here first.
Venmo at Celia-Lindford. I think that's my Venmo.
They just start Venmoing.
Just got $1 million.
They just start Venmoing. Wow. That other Celia Lindford is very lucky right now.
Yeah, she is. You know what? I wonder, maybe I should get that car paint and write on my car, get me to Everest, and put my Venmo.
I think you should.
I think you're right.
Good luck with that.
Thank you. Thank you. We should both do it and see who gets more.
Ooh, a competition.
Ooh, hoo-hoo.
Okay.
Let's That's do kind it. Of a good idea.
Okay. Deal.
Nope.
All right, we'll figure the details of that out later. In the meantime, you guys are probably wondering what we know about Mount Everest.
We know a lot of things. We don't know everything. We know a lot of things.
For those of you who are looking to invest in us, this is our chance to prove to you that we are doing our research.
Yes.
So, speaking of research, my sources were Wikipedia,
as per the usual.
Yeah, me and Celia were talking earlier, and I think we will just go standard, me doing Wikipedia and Celia doing all of the intense research. So,
yes,
that will be our standard.
Yes. So if you want the real stuff, you know where to find me, at Celia-Lindford.
Wow, way to use that.
Yes, I'm going to start shamelessly plugging my own stuff.
Your own Everest fund.
Yes. Was that your source?
Yeah. Yes.
Your singular source?
No, well, I have like 5 different Wikipedia sites.
Oh, but it's all Wikipedia.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, not to brag, but my sources are Britannica.com, National Geographic, History.com.
Wow. Those of you at home, please take note that she can't say history. I would like points for that.
Hey. You're breaking up. Listverse.com, spcc.org.np, and padmaorganization.com.
Wow. A lot of .coms there. I don't know how I feel about that. We like some .orgs.
Wikipedia is not a .org.
That's okay.
You literally used one site.
All right, let's move on, guys.
So for starters, Mount Everest is located in the Himalayas.
Oh, I got that from Wikipedia too.
Oh my goodness, that's amazing. Did you also get that they border between Nepal and Tibet?
I did.
Wow.
Yes. Did you see? This is just going to turn into a competition.
Did you know?
well, did you know?
Who's going to get to Everest first? Huh?
Everyone just is Venmoing us each individually as we score points.
It's like just tennis back and forth.
Anyways, back on track.
What do you have?
It is the highest mountain above sea level. Did you know that?
I did know that. Did you know the ones that are actually the tallest
are underneath the sea?
That was not what I was going to say, but do you know what they are?
Yeah, they're under the sea. The SpongeBob SquarePants.
No. I'll tell you later. We'll let that marinate for a second.
Okay.
So some other names for Mount Everest include, are you ready for them?
I'm ready for
them. I'm going to butcher them so horribly, everybody. Please dock money from @Julia-Slowoski for my butchering. So the names include the Sanskrit and Nepali Sagarmatha. Sure. Which means peak of heaven.
Do I get an attempt on these names?
Yeah, you can try them.
Sagarmatha.
Ew. Why would you say it like Sagarmatha?
That's how it's pronounced.
Yeah. I don't think it is.
Yes. And it means head in the great blue sky.
It doesn't mean peak of heaven?
No.
This is awkward.
Well, it's
Britannica
possible,
or Wikipedia.
It's possible that Wikipedia could be wrong.
It is possible.
All right, moving on.
I don't know if Encyclopedia Britannica is incorrect.
Moving on.
We have the Tibetan Chomolungma. That sound right? Which is the most common name, which means goddess mother of the world or goddess of the valley.
Oh, I love that so much more. Wikipedia just said it meant holy mother.
Oh, what is Wikipedia doing over there?
I don't know. It's like making all of these cool names vanilla.
It's like they punched it into Google Translate.
Yeah, that's also very possible.
Probably what they did.
That's probably what happened.
So we also have...
You go. Okay. Please. Okay. Please go ahead.
We also have the Chinese pinyin name Zhu Mu Longma Feng, or the Wade Giles romanization Chu Mu Longma Feng. Oh, it's just a different spelling. One's with a ZH, one's with a CH.
Mm-hmm.
And also spelled with a QO. So yes. Pick your spelling, but it all is the same thing, and I couldn't tell you what it means. Britannica didn't give me that.
The other most common name for it is Mount Everest.
Ah, yes. Since we all call it Mount Everest.
I actually have some history behind that, if you're curious.
I do want to know.
Did you hear anything about it in your research?
I did hear that it used to be called Peak 15.
Yes, that's true. That is a fun fact.
I wonder where Peaks 1 through 14 went.
I know. I was kind of curious about that too.
But why, out of all of the numbers, it was 15?
Could not tell you.
Nope.
Lucky number. That's when I graduated high school, so...
Same. Wow. Yeah. We have so much in common.
Twinsies. Okay, so some history behind it. When the British mountaineers, which I'll get into them a little bit later, but when they were asked to come up with a name for what they called, like Celia said, Peak 15 at the time, they wanted to use a local name. These mountaineers were very set on like kind of making or like kind of paying their respects to the local areas and stuff like that.
That's great.
Yeah. Started out with good intentions.
Yeah. You know, as most British conquering did.
Yes. I mean, yeah, sure.
Okay.
But with their limited ability to interact with the local people near the mountain because of various like restrictions on foreigners, like a couple in some of the areas, like in Nepali, they didn't really like Nepal. Foreigners. Yeah, Nepal, sorry.
No, you're good.
In Nepal, they didn't like foreigners to be coming around them. And
the Nepali people didn't like foreigners, or the British people didn't like the Nepali people?
Well, that's, it all depends on who's right in history, right?
Yes, that's true.
So yeah, for whatever reason, they had limited ability to interact with the local people. And they also had, obviously, language barriers. They spoke different languages. And there was also a wide variety of names for the mountain. Those who were able to communicate with local people figured out. And I mean, Celia listed off a couple different names that we have even like that have led up to now. But even back then, there were like so many different names for this mountain.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of trying to figure out a compromise, they just went for, well, here's what happened.
Tell me what happened.
So one explorer suggested it be named after a previous British surveyor general of India, George Everest.
Sir George Everest, if you don't mind.
Yes, my bad. Sir George Everest.
Sir George Everest.
Yes.
I don't know, he sounded like a little schoolboy, but there you go.
So Sir George Everest actually opposed this idea. He didn't like the idea of his name being used because he really thought that it was important to keep it like authentic and traditional and all of those things. But he was vetoed.
Clearly, so, he got outvoted.
Yeah, he got outvetoed.
Sorry, buddy, your name's going on this mountain.
And I mean, his point, he had valid points. He said that, you know, his name wouldn't be able to be written in Hindi or pronounced very well either in native languages around the area. So he was thinking about the native people around that area, which is great. Because obviously the people who named Mount Everest were not thinking about that. But, you know, it happens. Whatever.
You know, just a side thought. It's very interesting that all these mountaineers kind of descended and said, you know what? Scrap your names for your beloved mountain. We're going to give it a white man's name.
Yes.
Very interesting.
Yeah. Kind of like... same vibes. I don't know why conquering is such a vibe, but same vibes as like the moon, how it doesn't matter whose flag is up there, it gets taken down and put up. I don't know how the moon works, but
it's all conspiracy theory anyways, though. We've never even been there.
It's true. Anyways, wow, let's get back
to digress.
I just lost like $20 right there of my funding for Mount Everest.
people are requesting you.
Yeah. All right. So despite his objections in 1865, the Royal Geographic Society officially adopted Mount Everest as the name of the mountain.
Cool.
So,
1850, 1950.
Neither.
Oh, sorry. What year?
1865. Close though.
I don't know where I was.
You're super close.
I was like, wow, 1950 seems really late.
Yes, very late. So yeah, that brings us to, I don't know where we're gonna go after that, but that's all we've got for names. So yes, that was some exciting info on the names.
It was.
Now you guys know what's up.
Now you know about Everest. The end.
So
Mike, super Everest. Short show. So do you want to know some physical features? Kind of the creation of Everest.
Actually, that sounds really cool. I don't have anything about that.
Okay. It's not a ton, but basically the Himalayan range was created by tectonic plate movement. Ooh. As most mountain ranges are formed.
Yes. We have one up here in Washington.
Yes. Yes. They're across the continental United States. Yes. It's pretty great. But this one in particular was created from the Indian Australian plate colliding with the Eurasian plate about 40 to 50 million years ago.
Wow.
And then the Himalayas started rising about 25 to 30 million years ago. And then the Great Himalayas, I don't know what the difference is between all of these, but the Great Himalayas began to take their present shape during the Pleistocene epoch, which is about 2,600,000 years to 11,700 years ago.
Wow. Yes. It's so crazy to think about all these timelines because it's like, it kind of makes you realize that your life is literally just a piece of sand on the timeline of the world and universe.
A speck.
Yes.
And we got a lot of problems.
Yeah, so all of your hashtag first world problems, put that into perspective.
Look at that. Look at the dinosaurs. They literally had an asteroid come and take them out of this life. If the dinosaurs are even real.
Let's go there tonight. Let's go there.
Okay. Let me get my notes.
That's a subject for another day.
It is, which we'll get to. Don't you worry.
All right.
Okay. So I now have... okay.
Sherpas. I have
the Sherpas.
Yes.
Should I talk about the Sherpas?
Tell me about the Sherpas.
Okay. So there is a really special group of people that live in the Himalaya Mountains.
Uh-huh.
And they are, so the Himalayan mountains have been home to indigenous groups who live in the valleys. And one group in particular are called the Sherpa people. So Sherpa is often used to mean mountain guide, though actually refers to an ethnic group.
Oh, interesting. Because yes. I always thought that Sherpa, like you said, I thought that Sherpas were the people that like took you up the mountain.
Well, they are.
Basically.
But they're both.
Yes.
So in, I think.
It's one and the same.
It is. Yes. However, where the kind of misunderstanding comes from is that it's an ethnic group.
Yes.
And this group of people, this ethnic group of people happen to be the people who take you up the mountains. So the Sherpas, this group of people, they provide great logistical help and knowledge about the mountain ranges. And they're phenomenal guides because they live at such high altitudes that they're accustomed to the low oxygen levels.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So they're already ready to go.
Yeah.
Fun fact, my brother actually, so he worked not a call center, but kind of a taxi center. Mm-hmm. But not for taxis. It was like a little like mountain streetcars or whatever.
Yeah.
And he worked with a man named, I'm going to name drop him, Sherang Sherpa. And he was from Nepal. He was from these Sherpa villages.
Cool.
Also, I'm so sorry if I'm not using this word correctly. I don't really know how to use it.
Write in and let us know if you are aware.
But Sherang was in town on vacation, but he was getting ready to, not on vacation, but like for the summer, for the winter, whatever. But he was getting ready to go back to Nepal to be a mountain guide.
Cool.
For up and down Mount Everest. So it was awesome.
That's amazing. Still up
there.
Yeah. What a Sherang, cool, like, out there. What a cool meet.
Yeah.
So, neat, cute,
very. Anyways, so yes, yeah, so most people, I think all people actually, they will pair with a Sherpa, and they will go up and down Everest.
Cool, that's yeah. Awesome.
Do you want to tell me about some dangers?
Yes. So, I'm sure you might have a few too.
I do. I do, but I you might have more.
TBD.
I guess we'll see.
All right. So, here's what I've got. I'll just list out like a few dangers that are talked about as like the most common things that cause problems for people up on the mountain or on the hike. So altitude sickness, like you said, is a big one that people deal with. Mm-hmm. Weather, obviously, you know, you're up in these harsh mountains, can be really rainy, really windy, really snowy, really icy, all that kind of stuff. Wind is a big one. You know, you're on these really small trails sometimes, and there's cliffs and there's wind blowing you off the trail.
Which is not good.
Yes. There's avalanches, which bringing it back to our podcast, Good Girls Go Green. Avalanches in the recent years have become a lot more common, actually, because of global warming.
Climate change.
So actually, I'll talk about this a little bit later, but they issue a permit every year. They have like a set amount of permits that they issue. And the last like few years, they've had to extend these permits because parts of the mountain have been closed down due to avalanches.
Oh, wow.
But only in recent years. Mm-hmm. So yes, that's been interesting to see. And then ice fall is another big one that causes problems for people sometimes. As of 2019, over 300 people have died on Everest.
How many people have died scuba diving? Not that many.
Are you sure?
No, I'm not sure.
Should we compare stats?
Maybe we should.
Next week, we will be doing a scuba diving episode.
Yes, Stay Maybe. Tuned.
TBD.
Perhaps.
Yes. So, yeah, as of 2019, that's the number. And so the kind of scary thing about these people dying on their treks on Everest is that many of these bodies still remain on the mountain.
Yes.
So that's kind of creepy. And the reason for that is just because they're in such remote areas and kind of hard to get places a lot of times that it's just like almost impossible to even get there to pick mm-hmm. the body up.
Yeah, so, it's almost more dangerous sometimes to go get it.
Yeah. And a lot of times these bodies are kind of preserved. Like if you think about like fish on ice, mm-hmm. I don't know why that was the first thing that came to my mind.
Yum.
But anything, if you put anything on ice.
You know, it's why morgues are cold.
Yeah. Yes, that too. So because of the cold factor up in these mountains, it preserves these bodies, which is also just another layer of creepy.
It is.
And do you want to hear, this is my last kind of creepy thing.
Yes, I want to hear it all.
And then we'll talk about the death zone.
The death zone.
So this is last creepy thing. Below the summit is an area that's called Rainbow Valley. Have you heard of this?
No.
Okay.
This is new information for
me. This is very morbid. It's called Rainbow Valley, and it's basically filled with dead bodies still wearing brightly colored winter gear because they're still preserved. And a lot of times hikers will wear bright gear
uh-huh.
so that they can be spotted easier if they need help or just
well, clearly all those people needed help like and that. Their bright colored jackets did not help at all.
Well, a lot of times I guess it's like to stay with the group maybe, yeah. You know, in those conditions where visibility, where it's like so rainy or so snowy, visibility is pretty low. And so it's better to have like bright colored things so that you can right. see your group and stuff like that.
Yeah, you don't want to be caught out on Everest wearing a white parka.
Right.
That's a no-go.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. So that's kind of sad. It's called Rainbow Valley.
I kind of want to look up a picture just to get an idea. I don't know why.
Are you not finding it?
No, there's not a lot of pictures of it.
Well, I don't think very many people have iPhones up there.
But, I mean, there's some pictures, but not many. But the interesting thing, actually, is how many, how well they're preserved. Like, these people look like they're asleep.
Yes.
They're not decomposed at all. They look like they're asleep.
Yes. You know, the whole idea of the Iceman being frozen in ice?
Or, you know, fish on ice?
No, there's like, well, I guess these people actually died, so they won't come back to life. Never mind.
Oh.
Well. Never mind. It was a cool thought. Okay. But it's not. It didn't have an end to it.
So, actually, most people don't look like, not most people, but there are a few that don't look like they're asleep. Some of them look rather dead.
That's good. I guess. I don't know what the correct response to that is.
Well, yes, but I'm sorry, this is my trauma response. The recent dead look like they're asleep. The dead look like they've got real bad freezer burn.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. So like just over time, the weather kind of wears them out, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is interesting.
Makes sense.
And kind of scary.
Yeah.
So anyways.
Anyways.
Wow. I need to stop looking at dead bodies on Everest. I am too deep. And I'm looking at dead bodies on Everest.
Clear search history.
Seriously, if anyone were to look at my search history, they'd be rather concerned. But anyways,
that's all I've got about, like, I guess dangerous stuff. And then I've got the Death Stone. So do you have any other, like, dangerous stuff about Everest?
No. Well, okay. I do have, there is a limited climbing season due to extreme bad weather conditions. And so the prime time to climb it is in the spring.
Interesting. Yes. Yeah, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Since it gets really bad in the winter.
Yes, it does. And it takes about 2 months to do the hike. Mm-hmm. The hike. It's not really a hike at this point. But to complete the expedition, it takes about 2 months. And so if you think about it, the time to do it would be spring, summer. Because if you started it any later than... I'm acting like I know the climate of Nepal. But if you... July, even if you started it in July, you're still climbing, coming back or getting up there by September. Mm-hmm. And that's, I mean, it's typically it's already cold.
Yeah.
So not a good thing to do, but May is probably a good time to do it.
For sure. Agreed.
So
those of you at home who are supporting us, plan for May, I guess.
Plan for May. Were you going to talk about the Death Stone?
Yes, let's talk about the Death Stone.
Great.
So I just have a little bit on it, so I'll do an overview and you can fill in where I missed. How's that sound?
Okay, that sounds great. I don't have a ton.
Okay, cool. Here. Well, maybe we'll just kind of shoot back and forth then. So the Death Zone is, from my understanding, it's between the summit and about 8,000 meters.
Yes. Yeah. Okay.
And it's called the Death Zone because there are a lot of drop-offs that are super steep. And this is also generally, obviously, since it's the highest point of the mountain, or like the highest area of the mountain, a lot of people get altitude sickness, really hitting hard around here. Obviously, since it's so high as well, the weather is a lot more harsh up there. So frostbite and snow being like frozen in those areas is a lot more common as well. And high winds are especially dangerous up in those areas since you're off those cliffs.
Yes. And since the altitude is so high, climbers are required to rely on bottled oxygen and carrying oxygen tanks. And long periods of time in the Death Zone can cause altitude sickness and brain swelling.
Yes.
So yeah, make sure it's
quick. I didn't write it down, but I was reading somewhere where it said in this area, in the Death Zone, it takes about, I don't want to misquote it. Let me see if I can find it.
Meanwhile, I'm going to keep looking at pictures of dead people.
Okay. Okay. I found it.
Oh, great.
This was also on Wikipedia, but it says that it takes most climbers up to 12 hours to walk the distance of 1.72 kilometers, which is basically 1.07 miles in these areas because the conditions are just so harsh and you have to be so careful, like on the ice and on the ledges and stuff, that takes up to 12 hours in these areas to walk like a mile.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, maybe not.
So that's where it gets really scary too, because you're pushing, you know, like you said, you don't want to be up there for too long because that's when altitude sickness will really hit you and frostbite and all those things. But you can't be moving too quick because you're in these like really sketchy areas.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. And there's probably not a lot of places for you to take breaks.
Probably not.
So. Yeah.
So that's the Death Zone.
That's awesome.
Yes.
Well, a little bit of a fun fact, not a super big fun fact, but kind of, it's not fun. It's not fun. It's just a fact. But
as are most facts on this show.
I know. But as the climb has become more popular, there have been more traffic jams, which has resulted in climbers spending too much time in the death zone waiting to get to the summit.
Interesting. Yes. I can see that how that would be a problem. Mm-hmm. Yikes.
But also, and maybe this will kind of lead into what we're talking about later. So I don't know if we want to touch on it now. Here, I'll just say it. We can go into this subject.
Okay.
Or use it for later. Okay. So because there have been more traffic jams, it has resulted in more pollution up near the summit and as unwanted items are being discarded.
I believe it. Yeah.
Yes.
That's, I mean, it's kind of the same problems that the national parks are having right now, mm-hmm. as these outdoorsy things and like just hiking and camping and all that stuff is becoming more mainstream, I guess. Which, mm-hmm. I mean, that's awesome. We have a beautiful planet. We should enjoy it. But also, we should be aware and be respectful of it. My brother and I were talking about this the other day about how it's really, like, it's great that people are wanting to get out more. Like, we grew up camping and we love camping and stuff like that. But it's just too bad that so many people are starting to get into it without having camped their whole lives or whatever, and mm-hmm. they just don't really know how to treat the areas nicely, I guess.
Yeah,
they just were never taught that, you know. And so don't be dumb, guys. Be nice to
which
the
is
planet.
All the education you need is just don't be dumb.
Pretty much. Don't be a dummy.
Don't be a dummy who doesn't believe in science.
Yes. So that's a wrap.
Yes.
Anyways,
also, another point that I should have brought up earlier when I was talking about Sherpas, mm-hmm. but the Sherpa people have been super exploited by climbers.
I bet.
Because they experience, well, because of their experience, but also they experience the highest death rates of any employment category, mm-hmm. for such little pay. And so it's just, there's a lot of negativity, I think, towards Mount Everest that doesn't have to be there.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah.
Capitalism.
So, isn't it great?
That's what it always boils down to, it feels like.
Capitalism. So, do you want to know 7 things you should know about Everest?
I would love to know them, please.
Okay, cool. Let's see how well I know them.
Okay.
So, 1, the Andes were believed to be the roof of the world until the 19th century.
Whoa.
Until the height of Everest was calculated in 1856 at 29,002 feet above sea level, give or take 27 feet.
Uh-huh. So it's just a little bit taller.
Well, I don't have the height of the Andes, but
oh.
no one had measured Everest until 1856 when they were like, oh, let's measure it. And they realized it's
way taller. Gotcha. Yeah, dang. Sorry, Andes, you got knocked down.
Bumped out. George Mallory, a British school teacher, participated in the first 3 documented attempts to scale Mount Everest from 1921 to 1924. Before the last of those expeditions, he wrote, "It is almost unthinkable that I shan't get to the top. It is almost unthinkable that I shan't get to the top." Sorry, Mallory. That was probably mocking you.
That was awesome.
I can't see myself coming down defeated.
Yeah.
On June 4th, 1924, a teammate made it within about 900 vertical feet of the summit before turning back. And then Mallory and his climbing partner, Andrew Irvine, then made their own attempt for glory. Sorry, I took this from history. so it doesn't sound quite like me. But
Copy-paste.
They departed the 26,800 foot Camp 6 on June 8th and were last seen. Okay, yes. They were last seen that afternoon trudging upwards in their tweed coats, hobnailed boots, and other primitive apparel.
Imagine if we wrote our podcast this well.
Is this well?
Yeah.
Would you ever use the word hobnailed?
I would if I knew it.
Okay. Well, now you know it. So I expect it.
Okay.
And so this is a little bit of the mystery. So Mallory and Irvine hiked up and didn't come down. Yes. And I'll talk a little bit about that later, leaving you wanting more. Number three, Tenzing Norgay has climbed to the summit more than once. I don't know why that's pertinent, but it is. Congrats, Tenzing. You did it.
Congrats from us at Good Girls Go Green. If you would like
you're a doing sticker. It. Actually, I'm pretty sure. I'm pretty sure he's dead. I'm also thinking
by the day he might be.
Yeah. Yeah. I think though that his
He climbed it when he was like two.
I know. I think his children though they've started nonprofits in his honor to take care of Everest.
The fam. Oh
yes.
take care of Everest. That's good.
Yes.
Yeah, so I guess Norgay family, if you're listening and want to be interviewed or want a sticker, DM us.
If you want a sticker, anybody? Take it to the top of Everest.
Dude, if you're going to Everest and are listening,
take a sticker.
Take a sticker. We'll give it to you for free.
For free. At the cost of your life, we'll give it to you for free.
Yes. Everyone's starting to make plans now to go to Everest just to get our sticker.
Number four, more than 300 people have died attempting to climb Mount Everest, which you've mentioned.
I already said that.
Sorry, it was part of history. Okay.
Okay.
Number five, I'll just skip everything else that's attached to that one because we've already talked about it. Number five, this one's important. Okay. As early as 1963, Mount Everest has been labeled as the highest junkyard on the face of the earth.
Yikes.
Because empty oxygen bottles, human excrement, food packaging, broken climbing gear, and torn tents continue to spoil the environment there.
They haven't heard of pack it in, pack it out?
Nope.
Who are these?
I guess not.
Who are these hikers?
I don't know.
I'm going to talk to them.
Like, guys. It's Everest.
Listeners,
not everybody's out there.
If you are planning on hiking Everest, please pack it in, pack it out. We should make a sign at Everest.
Pack it in, pack it. Just stand there at the bottom with our cardboard sign, pack it in, pack it out.
Yes.
Anyways. So, yes, a single cleanup in the spring of 2011 removed over 8 tons of trash from Everest. Whoa. And there are still many more to be uncollected.
That would be crazy to be part of a thing like that.
Right? I'm kind of wanting to do that.
Yeah, because I mean, you get to do like that hike.
Yeah.
Hike. I say as hike. If it's just like an it's afternoon. Just a walk. but you get to do that, but also be helping the environment, which is very
But cool. Also, I feel like I'd get really angry at all the people who just have left stuff behind.
Just push them all off the cliff.
I would just kick them.
Add right them to the rainbow edge. Party.
Boom. Join them. So in order to counteract the problem, Nepal's government now requires climbers to bring back all of their equipment or risk losing a cash deposit.
Makes sense.
Yes. Also trash bins and
don't be waste stupid, incinerator. Guys.
Don't do it. Not at all. Also, new trash bins and a waste incinerator have also recently been installed near the mountain.
Oh, that's good.
But how far up the mountain does it go?
Yeah.
Is it even on the mountain? Because the issue's on the mountain.
Right.
Right. It's not really at the base.
Right. Makes sense.
Yes. Number six.
Hopefully it makes it easier, though, for people like pack out, you know.
I hope so, but if you're climbing all the way down from Everest.
Maybe not.
I don't know.
Okay.
I also wonder if there's any trash that causes avalanches. It's like, are you standing at the peak of a mountain and you go, well, I'm done with this oxygen tank. Boom. And you drop it and it knocks that whole ice shelf right off. I don't know. Is that what's going on?
That'd be such a bummer.
That would suck.
Wow.
And I'm sure it's happened.
Yeah, probably.
So, anyways, number six. Sagarmatha National Park is filled with animals such as snow leopards, musk deer, and red pandas. But almost nothing is observed above 20,000 feet except for Himalayan jumping spiders.
Dude, yellow... I was reading about that. I'm like,
out of everything.
Like, after that, like, don't even worry about like the whole like dangers of cliffs and, you know, ice and frostbite and all of those things. Like, that's not what I'm worried about. I'm worried about the jumping spiders that are going to attack me while like, I'm trying to climb.
Am I clinging to my ice picks and suddenly this jumping spider chooses to jump on my face? I'm dead. I'm letting go. I'm out and I'm taking the team with me.
Oh my gosh. I went to Spirit Halloween today because they are open. And we were standing, you know, those exhibits that they have, or not exhibits, but you know, those like.
the exhibits.
What is it called?
I know what you're talking about. Like they have the little
the thingies.
You know, they take the stuff out of the box and they set it up so you can see what it does.
Yeah. That. Anyways, so they had that and they had the little stomp pads, the motion detector things. And we were trying to like stomp on it and see what would happen, but one of them wasn't working. And so we were like, whatever. So we were just kind of assuming that all of them weren't working. So we were just testing all of them out, but not really like on guard. And I step on a stomp pad next to a big, huge spider. And I was just thinking, you know, it would probably like light up and start like crawling its legs or something like that, even if it is working. But no, I like put my foot on that stomp pad and it like launches out at me and full sprung, like legs everywhere, launches at my feet. And it was terrifying. So I'm sure if I was on Everest.
Those Himalayan spiders, man.
Yeah, that would be the end of me.
Too much.
That is how I would die.
I would let go and I would take everybody with me.
Yes, facts.
So above 20,000 feet, there's Himalayan jumping spiders, yellow-billed choughs, which are a bird, a type of bird, and bar-headed geese that migrate over Mount Everest. There's the local floral.
Everything else sounds fine. It's really just those spiders, man.
That's it. That's all that's up there, is spiders and birds. And then number 7, Everest is the highest point from sea level, but not the tallest mountain. We talked about this earlier.
Yes.
Mauna Kea rises only 13,796 feet above sea level, but is more than 33,000 feet tall because it goes down into the ocean.
Whoa.
As well,
that's so creepy to think about how much like is under the ocean that we just don't see.
I know. I don't love it.
Yeah.
Also, Mount Chimborazo in Ecuador is the closest to space because Earth is not a perfect sphere. It bulges in the center a little bit, and Mount Chimborazo is right there. So,
interesting.
Cool. Everest is not the closest to space.
Weird.
Fun fact. So, I've got some Everest cleanup campaigns.
Okay.
Are you ready for them?
I am so ready. I'm on board, other than the spiders.
Yes. Can we
clean up the spiders?
Just shuffle them out.
I know they're natural and all species are great, but also I'm not about those spiders.
Let's opt out of those.
Yeah.
So each individual person produces around 18 pounds of trash, which I feel like is oddly low, but that's fine. 18 pounds of trash in the 2 months that they're there. The entire expedition takes around 2 months, which includes taking enough time to acclimate to the elevation. So you get up to camp, wait at camp, get up to next camp, wait at camp, and you do that over 2
months.
Right. So that's, I mean, you have to pack enough stuff for that. So that includes probably any spare gear if anything gets ripped or broken or whatever, any kind of spare gear and repair stuff that you need to make. Including oxygen tanks, food, where you're going to go to the bathroom, all that stuff. There's a lot of factors to take into account.
For sure.
Climate change is causing snow to recede, which reveals once buried trash and excrement, which then pollutes water systems for populations that inhabit the area around Everest.
Mm-hmm.
So even though a lot of places are like, oh, just bury your trash, it's coming back.
Yeah.
Especially right now. And in a place like Everest.
Right.
On top of that, regular trash is just poured into pits that are sunk right outside community perimeters. So that's not great either. It's not managing trash. It's just dumping it somewhere else.
Hmm.
Governments, nonprofits, and individual privatized companies are currently working to clean up Everest. Some guiding operations are requiring a packet-in, packet-out mentality, including an initiative that was launched in 2014 to refund hikers their $4,000 deposit once they return with their 18 pounds of garbage.
Nice. That's a good incentive for sure.
Yeah. And I think it's 4,000 a person.
Yeah.
So bring your 18 pounds back, you'll get your 4,000 back.
Cool.
Which is a cool incentive, but also, I mean, at that point, are you like, well, it's just 18. It's just $4,000. I don't know. I don't know who says that.
I wish that I had that mindset.
Burn it. It's just 4,000. So, yeah. So I found a couple nonprofits that work to clean Everest, and I'm going to read their
info.
A little bit of their info. One of them is more focused on Nepal that has happened to take on a cleanup Everest project, mm-hmm. but they're up there.
Okay.
So the first one is the SPCC, which is the Sagarmatha Pollution Control Committee, which is a community-based NGO or nonprofit established by the local Sherpa people of Khumbu in 1991. It is the lead organization working to manage waste in the Khumbu region, which form the Sagarmatha National Park and its buffer zone, and also encompasses the core Everest trekking area. SPCC has been continuously working to keep Khumbu clean through development of appropriate waste management infrastructures and integrating sustainable water management approaches, such as setting up a system for and finding opportunities for waste reduction, reuse, and recycling. Since 1997, SPCC has been contracted by the Ministry of Culture, Tourism, and Civil Aviation to set the climbing route through the Khumbu Icefall. The SPCC also works to check climbing permits, monitor illegal climbing, and implement waste management strategies at the base camps of the Khumbu areas, mountains, and peaks, including Mount Everest.
Nice.
So lots of information, but that's what that nonprofit does and kind of what they focus on, which is cool. So cool.
Yeah. A lot of widespread stuff, but also very needed.
Yes. If you are interested, if anyone listening is interested in volunteering with SPCC, the link will be on the website and you can check it out. See how to get involved. So the second one, which is the PADMA organization, what they do, says, over the years, we have provided education opportunities to disenfranchised children, operated substance abuse recovery programs, built greenhouses and water purification systems across the Himalayas, led medical camps, completed natural disaster relief and reconstruction projects following the 2015 Nepal earthquakes, worked to restore devastated environments on land and in the sea, fought to stop human trafficking, and supported ecological research of endangered species and marine habitats.
Sweet.
So, yeah, so they've got a lot. Yeah, so they happen to have undertaken an Everest cleanup project, mm-hmm. but that's not necessarily their main focus.
Yeah.
So,
cool.
Yeah, lots of stuff going on. Lots of ways to get involved through those couple of nonprofits. And I'm sure there's others out there. But those were the two kind of main ones in the region.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah. So if you have nothing else, I have some mysteries.
Yes. Share the mysteries. I think we've pretty much covered all of the stuff that I've got. So
cool. Yeah. Okay. Sounds good. Well, I just have three little mysteries to talk about, and they're varying from mystery to spooky to spookier.
All right. Sweet.
The first one is, in 1933, the Englishman Maurice Wilson decided to crash land a plane on Everest and then solo climb to the summit, which was a very thought out idea.
Oh my gosh.
Clearly.
Yes.
it gets better. He trained in Britain, hiking and learning to fly a gypsy moth plane. I don't know what type of plane that is, but in 1933, it's probably very similar to the 1933 planes.
Yeah,
you sure. know, you know the ones. Then following that, he spent the winter in Daojiling, where he prepped for the climb by fasting and praying.
Wow.
Which he believed would be enough to help him make the climb.
Maybe.
Perhaps. Clearly, clearly it didn't work. So in May of, it was a great thought. It didn't quite do it. In May of 1934, he made the expedition and quickly realized his mistake. Obviously, it was a great mistake to have crash landed a plane on Everest. So, he became blocked by an ice wall, but also his lack of climbing equipment probably contributed to his eventual demise.
Yeah, probably.
You know, that would do it.
That's a good guess.
That would do it.
Yeah.
His body was found dressed in women's lingerie. Or was claimed to have been found dressed.
Interesting. Either way.
Yes. Either way, very interesting. In 1960.
Yeah.
Or when his body was found. Later in 1960, a Chinese team found a woman's high-heeled shoe near where his body was found.
Huh.
So, theory potentially proven. It was also later discovered that he was and I don't know the PC way to say this, but he was found to be a cross-dresser.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know if that was, like, sexual identity or gender identity, or I don't know.
Yeah.
But he was discovered to have worn women's clothing frequently.
Gotcha.
So
maybe that's how he was hiking up on Everest.
Maybe, but I also don't know why he, like, why would there be a high-heeled shoe up there?
Maybe he was an early Patagonia.
Maybe. All by himself.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. There's not a lot of I don't know. There's a lot of better places to do this.
To be yourself.
Yes. Yeah. I don't know if crash landing a plane on Everest is
the move. There might have been some other things going on mentally.
Yeah. Yeah. So, moving forward.
Yeah.
My second one is a little bit more about the George Mallory and Sandy Irvine story. In 1944, the two of them made out to climb Everest. However, they never made it back.
Oh.
Yes. In 1999, Conrad Anker took an expedition to retrieve Mallory's body, which was discovered perfectly frozen. However, there was no sign of Mallory's camera, which would have ended the debate as to whether or not they were the first to make it to the top of Everest.
Mm.
But also, when Mallory went up, he promised his wife that he would put her picture on the top of the mountain. Mm-hmm. And so they knew that there would be a picture on his body. And the picture was not found. It was gone.
It wasn't found on his body?
Mm-mm, it was not found on his body.
Okay, so potentially, but it wasn't found up at the top either.
No, it wasn't. So they were found not at the summit. They were found on their way lower. On their way back down, lower.
Right.
They were last seen going up, but they were not seen coming back down. Huh. And so a search and rescue team went up there later, discovered Mallory's body. I don't know what happened to Irvine. I don't know if they went up to look for Irvine, but they went up to look for Mallory. And
poor Irvine.
You know, he's just laying there in the snow. Guys, anybody? But they went back up for Mallory, and they went to look for his camera and for the picture of his wife, mm-hmm. and neither were found. So,
gotcha. Okay,
which is interesting.
Yeah,
kind of spooky. And then, last but not least, Sherpa Pemba Dorje claimed record speed on climbing Everest, and he claimed having done it in 8 hours and 10 minutes. Which is a serious speed.
Yeah. Considering that the Death Valley thing was, or not Death Valley, the Death Zone area was saying that you would go a mile every 12 hours, basically.
Right. Right. And most people take 2 months to do it. And he did it in 8 hours and 10 minutes.
How?
I don't know. I don't know. But he says he did it on May 21st in 2004. So this is a fairly recent occurrence.
Interesting.
Dorje, on May 24th, which was 3 days after he hiked the summit, came across a group of dead climbers whose bodies were frozen in the snow. And he says, when I paused at a mound of rocks, I saw some spirits in the form of black shadows coming towards me, stretching their hands and begging for something to eat. I think those were the spirits of the many mountaineers killed during and after their ascent of Mount Everest. The bodies of many of those who died are still on the mountain, and one climber who died from an accidental fall is still hanging from a rope.
What?
Yes. And apparently there's the kind of cultural belief that the ghosts of Everest will not be appeased until their bodies are given a proper burial.
Dude,
so
can we get some like ghost hunter stuff going up there?
That'd be cool. That'd be pretty cool. There's probably some really spooky stuff going on up there.
Yeah,
but jeez. Also, the dude climbed Everest in supposedly 8 hours and 10 minutes, so he probably wasn't doing too good.
True.
Anyways, that's what I have. All right. Hopefully, that's a fun little interesting note to end on. Not,
I think so.
Not positive. There you go.
I feel like we kept it pretty okay this week.
Yeah. not too bad. Not too shabby.
All right. Sounds good. Well,
yeah,
guys, thanks for tuning in again. We are hopefully back to our normal schedule.
Yeah.
I hope you enjoyed. This has been another week here at Good Girls Go Green.
We'll catch you next week.
Ready? I'm going to plug us out.
Plug us out.
Okay. All right. Thanks for listening again, guys. If you enjoyed this episode, if you enjoyed our good jokes this week,
they're pretty great.
Please download and subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening to. If you can't subscribe, just download wherever you can. Our Instagram and Twitter pages are G_4podcast. And you can find our Facebook page, Good Girls Go Green. You can email us at goodgirlsgogreenpodcast@gmail.com if you have recommendations or want to be on the show. And you can check out our website, goodgirlsgogreenpodcast.com, which will be updated someday, eventually.
Yes.
But that's where you can find notes for today's show and other shows, and also our sources that we use. So if you want to do that, and then you can support us on Patreon at, you can find us on Patreon's website, Good Girls Go Green, or we also have a link to our Patreon account in our Instagram bio and our website. So go support us on there. We'd really appreciate it. And have a great day or night wherever you are.
Okay.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
You're the dummy that don't believe in science. Written on your forehead, always be denying. You're the dummy that don't believe in science. Written on your forehead, always be denying. Hey, hey, hey.